Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Last of Us podcast, episode 21. I am your host and producer, Albert, and I am joined by Patreon peeps, Whitney Fishback. Hello. I love the smile. No audio acknowledgement. She's just classy that way. and John Jereza.
Yo, 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 what's up?
Yo, 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 yo. We could pretend like this is the first time we've seen each other today, but no, we saw each other like 5 seconds ago on episode 20, which I started by saying 19, and I've got a problem. I need to just tame the brain. Where's the brain gone? Tame it.
Just... I feel like you can still make up for that later in the episode, though. So even make a mistake early on, it's like, this is the vibes that we're going for here. We don't slam anyone for making mistakes.
We don't slam. All right. Well, you might not, but I love guilting people, and I'm trying to train these two on the Topic Network, which I'll bring up now. Essentially, I want this place to be where you go to get bad influence. So I want us to be a bad influence at work, and I want everyone who joins to be more become more selfish and meaner and more prone to gossip and to slander. Awesome. So when you join the Topic Network, you're basically joining a toxic environment. Sorry. Anyway,
the most fun toxic environment.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like playing around and like toxic. That makes me want to find an old clip from this one College Humor sketch called Honey Boo Boo, and I'll see if I can do it. But anyway, while I'm doing that research in the background, let me tell you, Topic Network. You can go to us on patreon.com/Topic Network, and essentially, what Whitney and John do is they've now been added to this like pool of peeps who get these codes. That's essentially the core of patreon.com/Topic Network. But what you can also do, dudes, is John has his music. Whitney has this mysterious vocation, which he hasn't told us about yet. Whatever you're doing creatively, I really want. Whitney, do you like how we keep building the mythos around you? Yeah, I love the mystery. But you're creative. What do you do? Go ahead. What do you do? I'm sure you do stuff.
I do stuff.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I do stuff. That should be the name of the Whitney Fishback podcast.
Yeah, I do stuff. Yeah.
You do. That's right.
Sometimes.
Very good. I love the mystery. But yeah, so whatever you happen to be doing, the Johns and the Whitneys out there, I like to highlight you and single boost you. John, let's go solo cam. John, it's about you now.
Yes, for like the next 2 seconds or so.
Yeah, before I spurn you.
Partly a barista, partly a musician, sometimes a nerd. So I don't know which one is which most of the time.
And believe me, we will be cutting to this man's SoundCloud later down the line. Shout out to your amazing. Stop. You and Gustavo. I'm serious. You and Gustavo. That's all I got to say. Whitney, love is real.
Yes.
We have to start with love on the show because it's such an intense, heavy, post-apocalyptic-y kind of show that we do need to offset that a bit with fun shenanigans before we dive into. And by the way, now you'll soon learn something about myself, that when an episode is really, really sad, I tend to waffle a lot at the start because I'm procrastinating and not wanting to dive into how heavy and sad it is. So, yeah.
We could just waffle for the whole episode.
Yeah, we could.
Can we just waffle? Okay.
Yeah.
Go make some waffles, bring some on, and actually eat waffles while waffling.
Dude, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you. And yes, waffles are amazing. And waffles have a special place in now The Last of Us HBO lore as the thing that Old Mate makes for his daughter. He makes waffles.
Yeah.
Right? Or is it pancakes?
It's pancakes.
Pancakes.
Yeah.
Okay. Almost. Right.
This is the show. It's called Precious Plum. And it's very important that at some point after crying your eyes out, after watching this episode, that people go to College Humor. We're not sponsored or anything. It's like a 10-year-old, was it like 9 years ago? It's amazing. And this is an episode called A Swim in Shit. And like I said, they swim around in like a, because they're very much lacking in intellect, in smarts. And they find a water hole and they just like swim in this like irradiated water. So that's what Topic Network is. It's a toxic place that you have fun in. So there you go. Finally, it comes around. So yeah, there you go.
My name is Plum. I'm 6 years old. I mama beauty quack. My mama drive me around a patch.
Oh, what the fuck the booty?
She's my precious
plum. She's my precious plum. That's what.
Today, Plum's competing to be Kilf, Dug Up Pet Cemetery in Hell, Michigan. We ain't got no AC, so we as hot as the devil's dick pit.
And that is all you're going to get. We just had to have a bit of a chuckle before we dive into this
completely
hot chattering episode. So that is the devil's dick pit. And because they're on a and Joel and Ellie are on a road trip. And it's Whitney, can you help wrangle us back? What are we talking about today? And why is it so sad?
We're talking about The Last of Us episode 5.
All right.
Sam and Henry, our beloved brothers that we love so much.
Too much. Too heavy.
Taken away from us too soon.
Thank you. Very well summarized. John, what did you think of this episode? This is essentially the after show that because of the Super Bowl, we couldn't do it. So what did you think of...
It's life-altering in many ways, I think. Mm-hmm. Because we've already seen what the response was to Bill and Frank's episode. And a lot of people thought it was their favorite episode right then and there. This might be the unpopular opinion, but episode 5 is my new favorite personally.
Yeah, me too.
Really episode 4 and 5 together, but just because of what is in this episode, that you would think the show has already gone to a lot of depths, and for anyone who's unfamiliar with the game would think that's all the show might have to offer. And it's like, you know, with a lot of other shows out there, it reaches a climax at a certain point before the end of a season or however many seasons, and then theaters out. This is escalating and is not stopping.
Mm-hmm.
You think it turned up to 100, this turned it up to 1,000.
Absolutely, both emotionally and then visually, and also action-wise, everything. It's my favorite so far.
Yeah.
Whitney, same thing, same question. How about you? Immediate thoughts and vibes off of this one?
Yeah, I was completely heartbroken. I am amazed with how Neil and Craig and the whole team was able to, like, when they did the infected scene, like, I was on the edge of my seat, like, what's going to happen to Sam and Henry? And then we had this incredible scene with the infected, and I was, like, losing my mind. And then you go straight into complete sadness again. Like, it just blew my mind, and it's my favorite episode so far as well. And like John said, it will not let up. It's just
the sadness
pulling on all the heartstrings all the time.
Perfectly phrased. We have and he echoes yourselves, both of you, and myself, and the internet. 9.6, it's the highest rated. So, but we have here he is, Legion of Comics. Mark himself is chiming in. He was with us 2 episodes ago, and we hope to have you back on, mate. You are a legend. Yeah, Legend of Comics. That's your new name. The love is real. So, and no, I agree. God tier television, absolutely, and a huge part thanks to this young man, first role, I believe, first acting role, Kayvon Woodard.
Yeah,
incredible.
I have sent out feelers to his people. His people being his mum, who can. I think there's a way to join a podcast, even if, you know, you can just do it in interpreter style. Would be really cool to bring him on. And he certainly deserves the accolades he's getting and the opportunities. I think I'm going to see this boy. We're going to see this boy in, like, the live action, the Avatar Last Airbender series. Like, I'm just making that prediction right now. Like, he's going to be someone in that. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I can see that.
Whitney, the paint is fading because the dream is fading. Their journey is fading. That's why.
Ouchie.
You know, we'll go into. Oh my God, this scene. So much orange in this scene. Orange is the main. You know, and again, I don't know if you guys know this. Ready? I'll jump off when I'm doing the research, so it's not just like Google Town USA. But the color of orange. What do you guys know about the color of orange?
Well, I'll say it's for, well, for me, mostly symbolizes happiness, but apparently not in this one.
Interesting. Well, through my research and watching a lot of Breaking Bad, which we're going to be doing the Breaking Bad eventually, episode by episode, Better Call Saul, all of that's happening, because I am clinically insane. But yes, thanks to those inside the episodes, I found that the color of orange in like color psychology is the color of ambition, but pursuit specifically, pursuing, right, something. Mm-hmm. And as you know, the whole episode is they're being pursued by Kathleen's people. And, you know, one of the famous examples of like this color, this sort of chromatic symbolism is Hank from Breaking Bad. And he was always, as his wife was always wearing purple, is what he's always wearing. He is always wearing orange because he is always after Walter White. And guess what? White stripes, because his life has been cut through by Walter White. Always.
Wow.
And even unconsciously, you just see a lot of the orange there. And you see, this is two shirts so far. He's got a long sleeve one. So there's an intentional wardrobe thing going on there. So yes, orange, the color of pursuit. So there you go. Henry's erratic movement and discomfort in his final scenes at the hotel scarred in my mind. Yeah, I can't. I really, really can't. Yeah. Thank you. And then Legion is going, he's doing a bit of Monty Python. Well, it's clearly between yellow and red. You know, I got better. You know, very Monty Python of you, Mark. I love that. So get on the show, dude. Let's guilt. Join us. So Mark, right? I'll seriously just put the invite in the chat if you just want to jump on. You maniac. Mark the maniac. Go over to, why not? I'm going to actually bring it up for him. But yes, what did you think of the pacing of this episode? I will go Whitney.
I think the pacing was really good. And being able to build that story like from season or from the episode previous, and seeing that Henry and Sam actually saw Joel and Ellie as they came into town. But yeah, I think the pacing was really good. Ultimately, didn't want the last bit to play, but we got there eventually, sadly.
Why did we have to get there, Whitney? You keep saying it, but then you don't answer why. That's the question I want the answer to. Why would you make it's not your fault, Whitney. I'm just blaming. I'm sad, so I'm finding someone to blame. I know.
It's okay. You can blame me.
All right, I will blame you. Not really. This is our man, Mark, in the comments. He's amazing. Please go over to Legion of Comics. Very easy, youtube.com/Legion of Comics. A fellow eclectic. I'm just going to randomly go to one of his videos. I'm a big King Kong person, and you need to be going to this and talking about all this amazing Monsterverse stuff we've got coming up. There's going to be, so funny, Chernobyl-inspired Last of Us, right? Because of this sense of, clearly there's this... kinship through Craig Mazin between the two shows.
Yeah.
However, the Monarch series that's coming out, what I am also hoping happens is that Monarch, by the way, is the organization who like categorizes and hunts and researches the Titans. Well, basically, I really hope they're looking at Last of Us for like how to adapt again, further flung, kind of more outlandish subject matter in a really grounded way, the same way that the Chernobyl guy, you know, which, you know, Craig Mazin took Last of Us and has made it so grounded. So there you go. Hit my shorts. Been working on these a lot. I shall. Thank you very much. I'm not a shortman, but you're going to make me a shortman, Mark. Are you guys okay? Let's do a quick little roundtable. Which of you guys tick the talk? Do you tick the talk?
Johnny? I just started ticking the talk.
All right. Great. Great for you. Happy for you. Whitney, do you talk the tick?
Not anymore.
Good. All right. Yeah, John. So you see, me and Whitney are cool. John is just trying to be all like, I'm kidding.
I'm trying to be cool.
No, I'll say this. Whitney and I technically are less cool because yes. We are less on the talk of Tick.
I mean, okay. You're cooler than, yeah, it's fine.
Got it. You got it. Also, Baby Clicker, I love you guys. Baby Clicker.
I had a dream about Baby Clicker.
No, you poor thing. Tell me about it.
Dream time. So, I had a dream that Baby Clicker got me. And I like turned into a clicker.
Oh yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like I wasn't a clicker anymore. So I was like, am I the cure? I don't know.
I think you could be kindred with Ellie. I think you and Ellie energetically and vibe wise have a connection, which we will explore.
Yeah.
In future episodes. Whereas John, I always think of him having the vibe of Tommy for some reason. Mm-hmm. Now you guys would mind that. Whose vibe do I have as a Last of Us character? Whoa. I think Dina, but you can say whoever. Dina's rad.
Vibes.
What's my vibe? Man.
Well, you have pretty great vibes. So I would say Jesse.
Really? Oh, thank you. Yeah, Jesse, yes, thank you. Absolutely. I dig that. Thank you.
Yeah.
I can vibe with that. I'll take that. Mark's vibe.
I would actually say Sarah vibes.
Sarah? Okay.
Yeah. You,
appreciate that. Appreciate that. Yeah. And ouch. But all right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly why. Yeah.
Legion of Comics, he gives me Perry vibes, but a Perry that survives. He's like the smarter Perry. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Mark in the comments right now. Yeah, that's his vibe. So,
mm-hmm.
Shouts out to Flexible Kids, and Baby Clicker was cute. They actually went to the original designer of the clickers over at Naughty Dog.
It was incredible.
And I wonder if I could do some podception by like bringing in clips of the official The Last of Us podcast into this. So then I'm kind of single boosting them as well. Oh, I have Kathleen vibes. Smooth, level, and very motivated. Ignore her demise. Okay, thank you. I'm very honored because she's Kiwi. I'm Aussie. I love that. Thank you, mate.
Yeah.
This gem of a human being. Mark the mark. Mark my words. You want to be going to Legion of Comics. All right. Nothing? No good? All right. Both my co-hosts just went dead quiet. Because I will never stop my punning. I'm the punninator. You know what? I think the collective noun for puns should be a punnet of puns.
Yeah, for sure. I got one ready for episode 6. I got a pun ready for episode 6.
Thank you. Well, now we'll just start that drum roll early in our minds. Everybody listening, we'll go solo cam on Mr. Future Pun Man. Very, very much looking forward to it. Make sure not to forget to share it.
Absolutely.
See what we're doing again. It's a sad episode, so we're trying to get towards levity, aren't we?
We are
trying.
What does this horse mean, John? Let's talk about this. Oh, I'm kidding.
I mean, if we're horsing around, then.
Oh, I like that. Horsing around. Yeah. Well, you know what? Next time I see it and I see that horse, I will think of your comment and maybe laugh a bit.
Yeah.
This has the saddest song at the end of it. It really does. I shared it to the Patreon. Be Gone Away, and we'll find the actual thing. It'll be probably in the trivia. Yeah. Really, really fucking heartbreaking. I mean, it could just be the rest of the episode of us just saying this was really fucking heartbreaking. But go ahead, John.
Yeah. If you guys could also help me out, I was trying to find the lyrics right then and there. I'm also, for some reason, blanking on a title. But... it was
something on... fire, fuel to fire. Yeah. Agnes Orville.
I do know it's on The Last of Us Part 2, or was that in Episode 4?
Oh, do you think fuel to fire? Well,
I might be getting my facts wrong. I know one of the ending songs was, from the Part 2. But anyway, like I think I'm a big fan of Agnes Obel.
Yeah,
and they could not have picked a better song.
It's salt in the wound. I mean, I love you, Agnes, but you may as well have just been this giant 6 or 7 kilogram bag of salt poured into our eyes right at the end of that episode.
Giant bag,
such a shout. Like a, and yeah, shouts out to you, amazing. So Danish singer-songwriter based in Berlin. So this is the Agnes Obel Minute. Everybody go. And Agnes Caroline Tharup Obel, right? Been at it for a while, it seems. Doing wonderful, very soulful work. And may this be everyone's kind of cue to, as I hope is happening with John, going over to, I'm calling, I like the, you know, you have, it's Windmill, it's, what's the rest of the title?
Windmill Road.
Windmill Road. And now I just feel like you could just have that word windmill. Interesting. I just love that.
Just
windmill.
Yeah, there's a bit of a story to that, but I feel like it somehow also ties into all the narratives that the show is doing, because windmills have a certain serenity to them.
They do. They do.
And I feel like it ties into how this this show depicts survival.
Not only
physically, but emotionally.
I agree completely. This is something where, with your music as well, that this is how it makes me, the solemnity of it, right? The feeling of being in a really low place, but then this just almost like a little creature or something, like this song kind of joins you there and like speaks to how you're feeling and gives voice to how you're feeling. It's I mean, it's always better to not be alone whenever you're feeling sad. And even if you're physically alone, if you have a song that speaks to how you're feeling, you're not technically alone because the song is there for you.
Yeah, so, I think there's something to be said about the nature of songs being great companions to grief.
Yeah.
Well, music in general being great companions, because I already see Mark going back to John Denver. I love it.
I know this guy. Yeah.
It's usually a trip that people take so that they have something to offload their emotions onto, because I do know personally that for me, like, my journey as an artist has also been a journey with emotions and how they manifest as a companion, because, you know, artists tap into their emotions in every single way to produce and create. And for the themes that the show addresses, like, still that song in episode 3 with Bill and Frank, like, you can't just listen to any song and think this is going to tie into a show like the last episode. It's always specific. Like, it's almost like there's a song that belongs on every single episode. It's amazing how accurate tying songs to each episode is, as far as having a companion to it.
Well, it's just gonna be dead air for the next minute or so as we go through these photos and just like suppress tears. But well, we gave Kayvon a hand, so we're gonna give Lamar Johnson a hand.
I'm sorry.
We've given Pedro and Bella their hands. There'll be many more, but Lamar shined us all with that completely heart shattering end to the episode of this world. We in society, one thing society does, like, it pads things out. Like, we can see things coming, we know schedules, there's like, oh well, you know, oh, when things are being replenished, or when, like, schedules become so important in society and civilization, like, as you know, we scheduled this show, you know, and the days of the week or whatever. But when things collapse, there's no structure. You're suddenly at a point where you could be killed. Like, you become prey. Like, it's the life of like a rabbit or a rat or something that could be swept up and eaten up very quickly. And always a lot of intrigue comes from analyzing the human psyche as how it would behave with those, with that new context of not being top of the food chain, with that uncertainty being the norm and that certainty being, you know, ripped from us. So when we let it, cause we live in a society, like we live in a sort of civilized kind of, you know, predictable in some ways, you know, structured society. And when we start to connect with a character who isn't, but we start seeing this, oh, they've met and now they're going to go to Kansas, right? Like the first instance, I was telling this to Whitney, John, is like the first instance of that wall of jadedness and alertness coming down. Yeah. Like maybe we can go forward with these two and we can start building a family. Like,
right.
Nothing is more heartbreaking than as soon as you start to consider building and consider a future, then everything being ripped away. And it was insane to see those two characters ripped away so quickly, one after the other, you know?
Yeah. So. Not to jump straight to the end of the episode, but that also ties into that. I think the inside of the episode also goes into it. That realization that Joel had of that wall that he had for so long slowly starting to come down because of how much time he's already been spending with Ellie. Yeah. And he's starting to realize that this is slowly but surely inching closer to having some semblance of a similar connection that he had with Sarah, even though
so
biologically Ellie isn't his daughter, but with enough time she basically can be.
Yep.
Truly. Yeah, she go ahead, Whitney.
She will be.
Very beautifully put.
And I think Joel also, like, the look on his face towards the end of the episode, just like a little bit scared, like, because he's letting this girl into his heart a little bit. And he just saw what the cost is for that, for letting people in.
What's more, because we love, like, in life, I think it's what keeps us going is the notion of building, like putting a coin on top of another with savings or putting an experience on top of another in terms of becoming more well-rounded. Like, we get that sense of momentum from growth and from progress. And when you have something that you've just begun to step out of your shell about, have that ripped away, it's that's how these things become. They're sad, but they've also become pay-ans to, like, it's worthwhile living unto itself. That's the thing that's missing for Joel, is he says you live for family, but Ellie's going to help him remember it's like you live also to be alive, to, like, to the worthwhileness of like the birds and the, like, the stuff that she's always trying to stop Joel and in his tracks, and like smell the roses, like enjoy the car that we're in. Like, she's like, oh my God, this feels like a spaceship. And he's like, oh, it's a beaten up old car or whatever. And I love that reference to spaceship, which is such a 3-2-1 spoilers, but yeah, Last of Us Part Two nod. It's really cool. Yeah. Dialogue there. Let's jump into this inside the episode. And as we go along, if you guys have any thoughts, you can wave to me and we can flag and go on from there. Let's go. Mm-hmm.
The narrative function of Henry and Sam was to show a mirror image of Joel and Ellie, this brother that's almost like a father to Sam, a person that's willing to do anything to protect his brother.
Sam and Henry are another example of this duality that we encounter, who are bonded together not only because they're...
All right. I know we're pausing super early, but guys, the hug. Come on. The hug.
The love that they have for each other and how dependent, you know, as Sam is on his brother. It just gets me every time.
I can't remember his character's name, but the elderly gentleman, the doctor, who basically Henry's in the middle of telling him, he's not going to come back. Like, Sam's connection that he made with him, that's why he hugs Henry, is because he's like, oh, I actually really like that guy. And that's why he feels sad. He wants to be comforted for, And I think Troy, who, you know, plays Joel in the games, on the official The Last of Us podcast, talked about how that broke him, just seeing like that reaching out for the hug of comfort, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or is it Neil or some one of them said that it's like it just hits them, you know? So there you go. All right. Craig, take us away.
Only family they have left, but because they also speak a language that very few people speak.
I love that so often when we were working on this, when we had a deviation, Craig would always call me. He's like, okay, I've been thinking about Sam and hear me out. I know it's a big change, but what if he were deaf? And it's a way that Sam has to rely on Henry even more.
They're going to help us escape.
And I said, that's so good, it makes me upset that I didn't think about it.
My name is Kevin Woodard. And my role is Sam. My name is CJ Jones, and I am the director of ASL.
Leading up to getting the role, I did not know ASL.
Lamar and Bella picked up ASL in an instant.
The interpreters, the CJ and Kevon in this month, they were so willing to help anyone who wanted to learn. In the end, all the crew were signing because everyone wanted to communicate and let them know how great they were.
Sam is deaf and I am deaf. We both sign. And seeing how deaf people are and how they navigate the world and that they can, I think, is important. Love it.
Whoa.
Wow.
When we go into the sewers and we see that there was like a whole community down here that has perished, you get to appreciate how different groups survive. For fans of the game, when they see that drawing of Ish, they know this whole other story that has existed and happened in this world. In the game, you could pick up notes and read them. So it's one good. Of those few moments of pure innocence when you're seeing them laugh. That's very rare in this world.
Sam definitely does bring out a childlike energy in Ellie. And I think that naturally came just through working with Kevon.
Endure and survive.
Yeah, man.
Oh my God, I desperately want to see these two become friends and like grow up and like become 30 or 40 and like go to each other's children's weddings. It sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks so bad. Oh man, why aren't they alive? I mean, why is, you know, why isn't Sam alive? Oh my God. Brutal.
Yeah, there, I've just been thinking about the parallels that the game already addressed with the relationship with these two. And yeah, I'm just looking, going after Mark's comment there. It's such a testament to Neil and, well, Craig's as well, but first of all, Neil, since he created this universe.
Yeah, with Bruce Sterling.
And he established the relationship that Henry and Sam had. In the game, a lot of it comes through the dialogue because you have cutscenes that are very few and far in between. And you basically have a season in the game since it's the chapters are basically divided into seasons. Mm-hmm. And the phrases that you hear that Henry says, like from the hug you were looking at earlier in the game, Henry tells Sam to stick to him like glue. Like glue. And that is a much more visual depiction of that, those words that Henry says to Sam, that this just shows how much Sam sticks to Henry like glue, not just metaphorically, but like he looks up to him.
Yeah,
as a fatherly and brotherly figure, that he sticks to him like glue in every possible way.
Yeah, beautiful. Any riffs on that, Whitney? Or
I'm just trying to hold it together so I don't cry. But yeah. I know that to go off what John was saying, I think Sam also looked up to Ellie in that short time that they were friends. And I think you could really see that towards the end when he tells her, you know, that he's been bit and he's scared and wants to know if she's ever been scared of anything. He probably sees her as like this fearless little girl.
Yep. And something beautifully expressed at the on the official Last of Us podcast. Again, if you haven't listened to that, please go. That's your number one destination. We're just on the community side and amplifying and enhancing the experience from this side. But go to them and during that recording, it's discussed how a line from this episode is, it's easier for them. No one's counting on them. But just as, you know, they were starting to get close and Sam was starting to count on Ellie for being there, you know, then it becomes again, the rapid spike of trauma for Ellie of killing someone a few days before, however long ago it was, and how long they stay in like Ish's sanctuary. But within a short amount of time, killing someone for the first time and then having this person, her taking essentially Sam under her wing and then having that ripped from her so quickly. There wasn't even that much time to get used to it or to build up any sort of idea of like, what if I lose it? There was, it was just all insanely sudden and traumatic. And so, yeah, it's actually just as hard on her, this loss of Sam, as it was on Joel, because they encountered the character at the same time. But Sam actually took to Ellie more, so it may even have been harder on her, as we see later with the burial scene, you know. Yeah. All right, well, let us crack on. Unless there were any points, I suppose we can continue.
No?
No, okay. Good.
Beautiful.
You know, I wasn't exactly telling you the truth before.
He's responsible for Kathleen's brother's death because he was saving his own brother. And so my brother's more important than your brother. These are decisions that love makes, not rationality.
Interesting.
I know why you did what you did, but did you ever stop to think that maybe he was supposed to die?
He's just a fucking kid.
How many people will you sacrifice? How many people will you burn to protect the one you love?
Kathleen would say her absolute moral code is one of her strengths. I think it's one of her weaknesses. You need to have empathy for the positions that people are in.
In a world where everything's falling apart, you latch on to the things that you can to stay sane.
For a show that has monsters in it, we don't have a lot of monsters because there's no gameplay when you're watching a show. But I wanted people to feel for the first time just
how... Can I also just say how much I love Craig fucking Mazin right now? Oh, because
he's amazing.
Put Craig Mazin or a Craig Mazin-esque figure behind all of the lagging and flagging properties right now. Like, Jurassic really needed a Craig to say, listen, you guys need to shut down this insane overdose of dinosaurs right now because this isn't a video game. That's why the worst that can happen to a blockbuster high production value thing is it starts to feel in the bad way video gamey, in the bad way like ratchet and clanky. I mean, honestly, the level of insanity of something like Jurassic World Dominion with its look, with, you know, spoilers, 3, 2, 1. Have you guys seen it? Do you care about spoilers? Yeah,
I'm not partial. Yeah.
All right. Locust, that's all I'll say. And I mean, Fallen Kingdom had this thing. It was like a marketing thing of like the most dinosaurs, the most action. And if we can just really remember that less is more, honestly, a lot of the time, more often than not, less is more. Yeah. And it bears repeating because, and it's not like a trope or a stereotype or whatever, but it has it's a pillar of the most worthwhile and memorable art for a reason. And it's why it kind of rolled the tongue for a reason is, if you create that build up and tension, and Ray talks about this too, and not to extrapolate it out, but like Ray does stuff with relationships, right? If people are too communicative and give too much to each other, there's an overdose and a saturation effect, and it just becomes inherently boring because there's no tension, there's no mystery. And you should, even in long-term relationships, you should have like, you should hold back a bit, just intuitively, and for there to be that intrigue. Because if you don't hold back, then no one's leaning in, right? Mm-hmm. If you just have this thing of the feast is always there, then your face is always in the feast, and you never get the sense of what it might feel to be a bit hungry or to have your appetite, you know, peaked. So Mark comes in. I love dinosaurs. Adam Driver versus dinosaurs, even better. 65 is going to be interesting. Yeah. See what they can do with that. I think Dinotopia will also be nice down the line. Mark, just bringing the tangents. I love it. Yeah, we'll cover that at some point on the show. But what do you have? Any thoughts, Whitney?
I love what you said there because in the previous episode there was kind of a teaser that there was something underground, exactly. And I was like, is it a bloater? Like, I was so excited. Yeah, and then by the time we got to this episode, it was so focused on Henry and Sam and Joel and Ellie just getting out that I kind of forgot. Mm-hmm. And so when we got to that scene, I was like, holy shit. Like, I was like, Whitney, on the edge of my seat.
imagine if me and you and John and Mark were in like the theaters in 1993, we're watching Jurassic Park, hadn't seen it before, and you just hear Hammond talk about, oh yeah, we've bred raptors, you know? And they go to that cage and they hear the sounds they make. And that's an impression. And certainly mm-hmm. that bloater in episode 4 or whatever it was underneath. Because again, just like the raptors, you don't see the bloater. You just hear the sounds that it's making underneath that concrete or whatever.
Yeah.
Or the infected or whatever. And we have so much between then and when they break out. Like it's like Lex and Tim with the T-Rex and Hammond, you know, and trying to guide... whatever, like that whole, like everything that precipitates with the hurricane and stuff. And then when you start, when you have that dread, like the pit in your stomach falls and you see that pan over to the mm-hmm. raptor, because you still don't know. And then you just see, and the fence is broken out. And then you know that shit's about to go down because yeah. you suddenly remember, oh my God, that thing that was foreshadowed earlier on is now a very real direct threat, you know?
Yeah.
So, masterfully done, and just like put these guys in charge of Jurassic Park, please. But yeah, go ahead, John.
It's, I mean, and like just to riff off of that, like the talk about foreshadowing, the next appearance of the raptors in the movie was through the raptor's shadow.
Exactly. Wow.
Yeah, and like it's so effective, with the cinematography that you don't get reminded of their presence visually, because just like with the clickers here, you hear the raptors before you see them again.
Mm-hmm.
And before the infected come back here, all you hear are rumbles, not even screams or snarls or gargles. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, it's just pure silence before just the shit that hit the fan is just spilling over the hole.
Dude. Absolutely. No, I get that. Any riffs on that, Whitney?
I'm so impressed with the bloater. I was like, it's like, it looks so much too when like when it got Perry. It looks so much like the animation from the game. So I was having such a fangirl moment for sure.
And I think they're going to probably talk about it in the behind the scenes, but when it gets Perry, holy crap, that's like.
I know. Yeah,
it's intense.
Yeah. Heavy.
And yeah, in the podcast, I don't know if you've heard it, but yeah, Craig talked mm-hmm. about how they wanted to have him tear him in half, but it's like the physics did. Like Weta got back to him and said, not going to happen because of the physics.
Involved,
you know, so.
Yeah, human beings aren't exactly Nokia 3310s. They don't break apart into three pieces.
That's right. Thank you. Someone's saying it. At least. Someone is saying it. All right, I brought it up because this is the kind of lineage we're talking about, and it's important to recognize that this is what we're experiencing right now, where we're experiencing something which is so reassuring and solace bringing, which is that the tenets of those first entries of like the Spielbergs and the like that is being honored and carried forward. That is another level to The Last of Us that, outside of just being a phenomenal series unto itself, it is an honoring of certain cinematic things that we just haven't seen either in films or in series for a long time. So hence I figured I would play this as well. Actually, before that, Andy says, wasn't Perry's head rip an Easter egg to the game? Yes, that's right. Right, like that. One of the deaths you can have.
Yeah.
Very intense. If the bloater gets you in the game, that's what happens. That's true.
Let's have a prompt up here.
Exactly. Let's try and collectively manifest, because we're on the Last of Us podcast. We have the Jurassic Park 30 years anniversary that's happening. You guys are going to be on that one. And let's have it so that we get whatever's happening next with Jurassic, let's have it be as good as. It's such a good scene.
Oh, this takes me back.
Right?
Look after
them. Hey. And sorry, but Joel and Sam Neill are like totally part of that same kind of mold, you know.
Very.
When we get Neill on, which we're manifesting that, I will tell him, it's like, guys, you know, I think he did mention Jurassic as like a massive influence. Like mm-hmm. even here, like the raptor is there. Like they've framed it so that there's a foreshadowing even then of the raptors getting closer and closer, specifically to the children. So we might be like doing these deep dives and stuff, but I guarantee if we go frame by frame through some of these Last of Us episodes, the foreshadowing that's why we're very close. We're about 12 minutes away, but we're going to do the deep dive of this one. So I guess as we move things along, I do want to honor John's point here about the foreshadowing. So intense. Beautiful. Had to. That's with the soundtrack added, but in the actual film, it's completely silent, which this series does extremely well. It knows when to take away the music, doesn't it, Jereza?
It does. The most terrifying part being no music when the T-Rex makes his thunderous appearance.
Hell yes. Very good. Yes, that's absolutely true. We have Mark saying, I watch all six Jurassic films at least twice a month for the past year due to my son being a diehard Dino fan. Shouts out to Mini Mac. Sorry.
Mini Mac.
I hope, Mark, for your sake, that you are raising this child to be as Australian as you. Keeping in mind, folks, that Mark is not Australian at all, but it is the myth that I'm building up around him based solely on the pronunciation.
Straight up Aussie vibes.
Tension breaking moment. There we go. That's me doing my best.
Yes.
Ian Malcolm. Just on the way to see Ian. It was a good time. We're going to have lots of fun on the Jurassic podcast very soon because it is a dormant year. And in the dormant years, guys, I love to discuss what things could become. And remember, oh my God, hearing those wire cables release are more intense than any soundtrack. You guys remember?
Yeah.
I'm serious.
Metal bending. So
exactly. So yeah, the Jurassic of Us. That's what this episode is about.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Because look at what's pouring up out of the ground.
When it came to the infected, we realized that we had the largest amount of infected.
ADD. The reason why I think Last of Us and Jurassic Park are being weirdly connected in this instance, and not just in other senses of like cinematographically and stuff with like clickers, raptors, all that stuff, is they both play on a fear that if you change two or three things, just two or three little things, it could happen, which is clearly they researched that you can't bring dinosaurs back. Sorry. But if you could, from retrieving the DNA, and this did happen, there is and plus dinosaurs exist just like fungus exists. Mm-hmm. So there's a closeness to reality that makes it fucking scary. It makes it effective in that way. So I just finally hit, and I wanted to share it with you. I hope that's okay.
Always.
All right.
The had in the show so far. So we got in contact with Terry Notary, who does a lot of work Planet of the Apes movies. He set up a special infected boot camp with stunt and movement people.
When you have a human being playing these characters, you really get this.
Let me tell you about Terry fucking Notary right now. So he played the mocap for Kong in... Yep, that's right. In Kong Skull Island, which is getting a animated series prequel this year with Netflix. They're going to do... It's just going to be called Skull Island. But this man, he was also the stunt double for Alan Cumming in X2, so X-Men United, doing all of that amazing Cirque du Soleil stuff. I've known the name Terry Notary since I was like 12 years old. Followed this man. Yeah, I was aware of like the ape boot camp, ape school that he created for the Tim Burton one. He went from the Tim Burton to the modern Planet of the Apes. We have the Planet of the Apes podcast getting ready for Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes next year, which is going to have like, did you see that? There's like apes have learned how to use eagles. Did you see that? It was like a concept art. Dudes, okay. Mini Planet of the Apes break in Terry's honor. But while I tell you more about this guy, he is the ultimate movement guy. So there was even, I think it was called The Square, like a sort of A24 sort of like kind of art movie, which I found like amazing that Terry got to have that that sort of spotlight on him. But yeah, I really hope he's involved everywhere. Speaking of everything being connected, you know, Jurassic. Yes, William H. Macy is going to be in the new Planet of the Apes. It's going to be rad. Fantastic. But yeah, like apes have learned falconry. Discuss. It's going to be
great. Wow.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. We're looking at, I think, July 2024. So we're expecting a trailer in a few months over at that there Comic Con. Should be a fun time. So
that's insane. Yes,
another thing that connects Planet of the Apes is you change two things, whatever, like an ALZ feasibly, the feasibility of apes overriding, like the closeness to reality. I'm telling you, these post-apocalyptic things, which I think the guys, maybe Terry even helped accommodate some of the connections that they made, because if you take a frame out of, like, for example, War of the Planet of the Apes, or maybe Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, that's The Last of Us as well. Like, they perfectly capture, don't you think, John and Whitney? Like, they're really...
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, even looking at that, that shot of him with the Falcon, like, the buildings themselves, and the fact that instead of a human in the shot, it's Caesar with the Falcon, and you could like think there. I'm already seeing so many parallels: Last of Us, Planet of the Apes, Horizon Forbidden West, even Zero Dawn. Just like mixing all of that together, it's like, I don't know if there's like a secret society of these guys, they're just sharing ideas with each other, but it's all interconnected.
Incredible.
Absolutely. Like, and a lot of this stuff here, if you look at like Gary Oldman in Planet of the Apes, like that could just be straight from a Last of Us episode, you know.
Could be.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They have a similar post-outbreak kind of story in that show, so more connected than you think, folks. But let's finish up this Inside the Episode, because we are 6 minutes from going into our deep dive, which we will do soon.
You really get the subtleties that it's so hard for animators, takes them forever to recreate. And
we have everything from a swarm of infected to clickers. There's a bloater.
Stop! Kathleen is killed by a child clicker. She was warned about a danger lurking in a basement. She turned away from it because she just wanted to chase after Henry and make sure she got vengeance. Maybe it's for the best. I don't think she's a person who could have found peace.
You think they'll be okay?
It's easier when you're a kid anyway.
Neil's story made it very clear that you cannot escape fate in this regard. And that, in fact, the more ruin and hurt you cause to protect this person, the more brutal it will be when you lose anyway.
The scene where Ellie tries to heal Sam with her
again, we notice in these replays, like, that's again Bella with the micro acting, with the lip, with the lip tremble. I'm sorry, I have to honor that again. Jesus.
She's incredible.
To protect this person, the more brutal it will be when you lose anyway.
The scene where Ellie tries to heal Sam with her blood, to her, it was her chance to be this hero that she'd been promised that she was. And she was so desperate, because also the relationship she'd built with Sam.
It was really tough for me to film the scene in this room. Sam is so important to Henry. Once he lost Sam, Henry felt as though there wasn't much to live for.
What did I do?
And I think it really affects Joel and Ellie moving forward in the story.
This is where Joel is beginning to understand what's happening inside him, because it's been 20 years since there was anybody in his life like a Sam that would ruin him if he were to lose them. And he doesn't quite know how it happened, but it has begun to happen now with Ellie. When he sees what happens here, all he can think is, that's going to be her and me. And it terrifies him.
Boom. Yo, the things that are the things that this series is doing, folks. Ay. Well, I mean, yeah, just on so many levels, which we talked about with, like I said, what Avatar did with visuals, making sub-Avatar Part 2 visuals inexcusable from here on, to me personally. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's a huge part of why Ant-Man. Ant-Eater.
Ant-Eater.
All right. Let's take that again. All right. That is why I believe Ant-Man Quantumania isn't doing so hot, because I think they they came in that aftermath of like, well, we're living in a post Avatar the Way of Water world visually. And I think everyone right now in production is like, shit, we live in a post The Last of Us world, you know?
Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Avatar, Legion of Comics, I'm just waiting for you and Whitney and John to join me on The Last of Us podcast. Is a sister show, the Avatar podcast, which we just coming up to 22K. It's weirdly our most popular show. So I kind of need to bring you guys on that pretty soon because I want you guys mixed in with that. Right? Do you guys like Avatar?
I need to go get like an Ikran figurine and just have it in the back of me. Please.
Do it. I believe in you. And then you have to go and get a Tulkun tattoo from my good friend over Papaya Can. Amazing. But yes, Mark, please do join us on that one there. Mark, he's chiming in again. Ant-Man and all of Disney's product look like crappy cartoons. I have to be okay with it to enjoy their stuff. Hey, you know, to some degree, it's like that's what I think they recognize that they're doing. I would love to, as long as the schedule permits. Well, you know what, guys? Speaking of schedules, it's 12:59. These guys are joining me in just a few moments, and I have to highlight them again because it's Whitney and it's John. I love you guys. You guys' details are in the description. You'll get peace of mind for Whitney on Instagram, and then Jamzy Dodger on Instagram. Just sounds like an old timey boxer from like the 1800s.
Yeah, it's like I didn't think through that much with the name, but it just stuck, and I'm rolling with it.
Because I'm engaging with you guys so often, I've just started to memorize you guys, and I've got the auto populate there. So that's Jamzy, and you'll get like at least 6 nicknames with me. Jammo.
Hey, 6 isn't enough. All the more better.
All right, so go over to my peeps right there and do it, because I'll tell you what, you will find as you like explore, and again, I'm just speaking to the people who have found kinship with the Topic Network, as these lovely folks have done so much that they didn't just ship, they actually joined the family, which is so amazing. I live every day in a state of so much gratitude for both of you doing that. But if anyone else was thinking of becoming another Whitney and another John, let me tell you, it's something that once you're in, I'm honestly like, these are just friends like that I just know now. It's a real vibe. You're not just signing up to like a community where it's like there's just that one way thing of a creator and a community and then that's it. I just can't wait to hang out with you guys in person when I visit. My God, we're going to have some of this amazing food that Whitney's beautifully demonstrating here. Love the vibes. Yeah. You guys sort of like live close by? Is that kind of, that's the vibe?
No.
When I visited in Ireland last month or December.
Okay. Well, we're meeting up in one of the lands, Scotland, Ireland, Iceland. It has to have the word land in it. I don't want to meet you guys in a place that doesn't have the word land in the title.
Okay. So not America. Land.
No,
but
I'm topic land. So Jamzy Dodger stole my baseball cards and put them in their bike spokes back in the day. So this
guilt cam, where they went.
Guilt cam. Uh-oh. Anyway,
I thought I was gonna get away with it.
Nope. Cosboz, no more here in Australia. Guys, thank you so much for joining on this episode of The Last of Us podcast.
Thank you for having us.
You guys are amazing. I'll see you in like 5 seconds when we jump into the third of our trilogy of recordings today, which is the deep dive for this one and a bit of a preview. We're going to look at the teaser of Kin episode 6. So you guys hang around, but bye.